Welcome into Executing the Edge podcast. I'm your host, Nick Hubb. You can find me on Twitter at Nick Hubb Sports. Today, we will be recapping the previous week, get into some baseball news, talk about trends, and break down some of these games for championship weekend and college basketball. This podcast is powered by the oddsbreakers.com, where you can grab my side subscription at a discounted rate, and check out sportspickhub.com, which is where I list all of my premium plays and subscriptions. Also, check out sportswageringu.com, or you can find them on Twitter at sportswageru. I'm part of the team there, and I'm very proud of it with the guys we have working. We use live courses, handouts, graphics, and models to teach students the disciplined, long-term approach to make money in sports betting. So recently, and in college basketball, I've been 22 and 16 so far in college basketball. The last 52 college football picks were 32 and 21. So we're in the positive, but recapping this last week, we've had a down week since Saturday. We've been 6-8 in the last 14 picks, which was from Saturday to today. So we've hit a bit of a stretch here where it's been a struggle, but you know, we'll rebound like we always do. So what I like to do here is get a little bit into rivalry week. Start with the Egg Bowl. Ole Miss took care of Mississippi State in this one. This to Ole Miss winning by 10 points. Cincinnati took care of business like you expected. Iowa beat Nebraska. Now, Nebraska has lost 8 games in the Big Ten, all by single digits. There's no other team in the nation that has lost so many close games. They're 1-8 in the Big Ten. They could have won all of them. Maybe not Ohio State, but they should have beat Michigan when they played them. Utah took care of business. NC State and North Carolina, that was a good one. San Diego State, that's another one. That's a tough one for me. I had Boise State last week, and they went up 16-3 to begin the game. San Diego State brought in a new quarterback. I say new because he actually started the season as the starter, and then they put him back in. And he actually changed the game for him, ended up winning by 11 points there. To finish off the Friday games, Arkansas won as expected. And then Saturday we had Georgia winning, shutting out their rival at home or on the road. And then we had Ohio State and Michigan. What a game. Michigan really thrived at home in this one. I think the crowd had a lot to do with that one. If they were to play on a neutral site, it would be a lot closer. Then the Iron Bowl. What the hell happened there? Auburn played with a backup quarterback. We're winning 10-0 the whole game. And Alabama decided to score in the fourth quarter to take it into overtime, which, by the way, that overtime has to change. Those overtime rules are ridiculous. They need to change those. And then we had Notre Dame winning going away. Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. Pokes winning that one. Heading into the Big 12 championship against Baylor, who escaped Texas Tech and only won by 3. We'll get into that matchup a little bit later here. Oregon took care of their rival by 9. And then we had the Penn State-Michigan State game, which was kind of a fun game to watch. White on white. It was snowing. I mean, they might as well have had camouflage on. I don't know. It was hard to see on TV. But Michigan State ended up pulling that out, even if they were in camo, by 3 points. BYU took care of USC by 4. Minnesota beat up on Wisconsin. That was probably one of the bigger upsets of the day there. Beat Wisconsin at home by 10. And LSU beat Texas A&M at home in Ed Orgeron's last game. So Pittsburgh beat up on Syracuse. Wake Forest beat up on Boston College. And then we had North Texas beat UTSA to end their undefeated season. They'll still play in the championship weekend here, and we'll get to that one as well. Clemson won, shut out South Carolina, and Houston beat up on the lousy UConn. The next thing I want to get into here is the MLB lockout. So for those that don't know what's going on here, MLB locked out its players on Thursday morning after months of deadlock talks with the MLB Players Association. It marked the first stoppage since 1995 players strike, and it's the ninth work stoppage in MLB's history. If the lockout drags on long enough, it could put the season in danger, the 2022 season. The two parties reportedly disagree on free agency, revenue sharing, and luxury tax thresholds for clubs. The two sides can still negotiate these terms during a lockout, but teams can't sign players to the new contracts. The collective bargaining agreement, the CBA, a negotiated accord that governs most aspects of the working relationship between players and team owners, expired Thursday, and there was not a new CBS agreed on. This is from Commissioner Rob Manfred. He said, "We hope that the lockout will jumpstart the negotiations and get us to an agreement that will allow a season to start on time. The defensive lockout was necessary because the Players Association's vision for Major League Baseball would threaten the ability of most teams to be competitive. It's simply not a viable option. From the beginning, the MLPA, Players Association, has been unwilling to move from their starting position, compromise, or collaborate on solutions." So, economics, players feel with the emergence of analytics from within the front office that fewer and fewer second and third tier players are getting paid when they finally become free agents after 6 years of major league service time, which is often when a player turns 30 or very close to it. In addition, players would like to be paid more at a younger age because that's when they're in their prime, which makes sense. The system also favors keeping players in the minor leagues for several weeks extra to slow down their major league service time, which is very true, and players hate that. Additionally, they feel the cycle of teams rebuilding is limiting payrolls. They would also like to have some guardrails within the system to prevent those cycles. One good thing for the players is as long as there's no salary cap, the system will always pay the best of the best. Something the league likes to emphasize, owners have not offered a hard cap during negotiations. So what happens now? Everything halts. Everything halts. The major league portion of the winter meetings scheduled for next week are canceled. The minor league side of the meetings will continue. There would be little point to holding the meetings since agents can't meet with teams. In fact, team personnel aren't even allowed to speak to media about their players on the 40-man roster during this lockout. And teams are not supposed to talk to each other about their players. So technically, no trades can be agreed on during the lockout, assuming executives follow their letter of the lockout law. Young players looking for feedback from their coaches during winter bullpens or hitting sessions are on their own now as well. Simply put, team personnel are prohibited from any contract with players on their 40-man roster. And drug testing will stop and pick up as soon as the CBA is ratified. So who knows what's going to happen, but I'm hoping they can come up with something here. There's a soft deadline on February 1st, which makes sense because it's right before spring training. So hopefully they can get something resolved here in the next 2 months. So that's what's going on with the MLB lockout. Now, I did have a question that I wanted to get into some trends here. And the question was, how much do you weigh into your handicap trends, priors? Does it vary by sport? Does it change as more data is available in the season? What's your approach with that data? I would say it depends, honestly. And yes, it would vary the time of year and what the trend is, most importantly. So I pulled some trends from covers.com. I feel like they have a good website for trends, but there are a lot out there that you should not pay attention to. But some trends here that I do like that I'll go over. And basically what I do with the trends is either confirm my play for that day, or it'll just add value to my write-ups. So those are typically the two things that I do with trends. They don't necessarily make a play, but they could break a play. So there are times that I'll go into I'll have a play or an idea that I'm going to pick a game, but I look at a trend and that could back me off of that play. Now, like I said, there's no way I would pick a play from a trend by itself. So, but there are some trends that I do like looking at, and I'll just run down these real quick. The trends that I like, for example, versus a team with a losing record. The next one's last seven road games, last seven as a road favorite, last five as a favorite, last five versus a team with a losing record, last 11 conference games, last 10 road games versus a team with a losing or winning home record, last 13 road games, last seven as a home favorite. So those are some ideas of the ones that I do look at. I'll give you some trends here that I don't even pay attention to, because I feel like there's no value and too much variance. So here I'll just run down this small list here. Last eight games in November, last eight games following an ATS win, last six games following a straight up win, last five games after accumulating more than 280 yards passing on their previous game, last 77 games after allowing less than 170 yards passing in their previous game, and last 44 after allowing more than 200 yards rushing in their previous game, last four games following an ATS loss, last 26 Wednesday games. You got to love those. Last 10 games following a straight-up loss, last 14 games following a straight-up win of more than 20 points, and one of my favorites, last five games played on turf. So to answer the question, it depends. Depends on the situation, depends on the sport, depends on trend, most importantly, and how do you feel going into it before looking at a trend. Try to make it the last thing to look at. You don't want that to sway. You don't want it to sway your decision. Now we'll get into some games here for championship weekend. We'll start here with the Friday night games. Now I'm not going to go over every single game. There are some games that I have premiums for, so I'll keep those for the clients, but I do want to go into some of these other games that, I'll go over some of the details and stats and where the money's at. Just talk about each game here to see at the end. I'll give you a lean for who I like in each one. So we'll start with Western Kentucky and UTSA. This one opened with UTSA favored by 2.5. It is now Western Kentucky favored by 3. So 79% of the bets are on Western Kentucky and 88% of the money is on Western Kentucky, which opened at 56.5, is now down to 53.5. 50% of the money is on both, and 59% is on the over here. So a little bit of reverse line movement for the total. Western Kentucky offense might have the ability to pass the ball on this defense. They average 8.6 yards per play, yards per pass, I mean, versus the UTSA defense averaging, giving up 8 yards per pass. UTSA is playing offenses that only average 359 yards per game, and the Hilltoppers come in at 529 yards per game. This should be a fast-paced ball game, with Western Kentucky ranking 6th in tempo and UTSA ranking 32nd. Western Kentucky is 1st in offensive success rate and 4th in yards per play this year, with over 7 yards per play, with Western Kentucky throwing the ball 65.9% of the time. That ranks them 2nd in the nation, and 80% of their yards come from the pass, which favors them in this ballgame. 422.75 passing yards per game is 1st in the nation for Western Kentucky, and they'll be against the UTSA defense allowing 225, which is 63rd. Second most plays of 20 yards or more goes to Western Kentucky. I lean the Hilltoppers here. Not an official play, but I would lean the Western Kentucky side here. Next game, we got Oregon and Utah Friday night. Utah opened as the favorite of 3, is now down to 2.5. 56% of the bets are on Utah, and 52% of the money is on Oregon. Opened at 60.5, is down to 58.5. 61% is on the under. 61% is on the under, and 95% of the money is on the over in this one, which is a reverse line move there for the total. Utah is the more balanced offense. They played 2 weeks ago, and Utah just crushed them. Utah's sack rate is 3rd in the nation, and the yards per play margin is 10th in the nation. This should be a slower tempo. Oregon ranks 74th in the nation in tempo, and Utah ranks 80th. These are two top 10 rush offenses, two top 10 third down conversion offenses, and Utah is not as good on the road. So as Utah won at home going away, I think this could be a different ball game. Oregon rushes the balls 57.8%. And 39.5 rushes per game. And last game, they only rushed 23 times. So that had a lot to do with how Utah got out in front early. Oregon was playing from behind the whole game. That had a lot to do with it. So if this is closer in the early minutes of the game, in the first quarter is going to be important for Oregon here. I still lean Utah, but I really think it's going to be a closer game and should come down to the wire, in my opinion. All right, so the next game here, Oklahoma State and Baylor. We got the Big 12 championship opened up at -6.5. Oklahoma State is now 4.5 favoring OK State. So 59% of the bets are on Oklahoma State. 68% of the money is on Oklahoma State. Total opened at 48.5 is down to 46.5, with 57% of the bets on the over and 60% on the under. 60% of the money's on the under. Baylor's offense, so this is going to be between Baylor's offense and Oklahoma State's defense, kind of like last week with Oklahoma. 6.35 yards per play for the Baylor offense against the 4.44 yards per play with the defense of the Pokes. Oklahoma State is 1st in defensive havoc and 1st in the nation with 48 sacks. That's 4 sacks per ballgame. Oklahoma State is 1st, and Baylor's defense is 9th in third down conversion rate. So look at that if they get stuck in third down. Baylor rushes 5.49 yards per rush, which is fifth in the nation. And Oklahoma State's going to battle them. They're sixth in the nation with only giving up 2.81 yards per rush. I lean Oklahoma State in this one because of the defense. Next game here, we got the Utah State Aggies and the San Diego State Aztecs. This one kicked off. This one opened at -3.5 to San Diego State, is now up to 6.5 favoring the Aztecs. 63% of the bets are on San Diego State, and 53% of the money is on San Diego State. So a little bit of a reverse line move there. Total opened up at 50.5. It's stuck right there all week. So it's still 50.5, but 72% of the money, or 72% of the bets, are on the under, and 52% is on the over. 52% of the money is on the over. These are just two bad offenses. Ranking 104th and 105th in offensive success rate. San Diego State owns the fifth best defensive success rate, so this should be a little bit tougher on Utah State. Utah State does have the more balanced offense. San Diego State runs 62.4% of the time, and Utah State has 39 plays of 30 yards or more. However, they're going to be going up against the Aztecs defense, who's only given up 15 all season and ranks ninth in the nation in that stat. So Utah State is 114th in red zone scoring, which could be an issue in this one. I lean towards San Diego State to cover this spread, and I would also lean towards the under. Next one here, we look at App State and UL Lafayette. Lafayette started the week as a favorite, -2.5, is now -3 favoring App State. 51% of the bets are on Lafayette, and 51% of the money is on App State. Kicked off the total at 59.5, is now up 4 points to 53.5. 60% of the bets are on the over, and 92% of the money is on the over. App State defense, last three games, has given up 3.4 yards per play and 206.7 yards per game. Pretty good. These are two heavy running games. Heavy running teams, as they both run the ball 58% of the time. App State is 11th in the nation at 3.17 against the run, and Utah State is 49th with a 3.79 against the run per run. App State red zone scoring is 91%. That's 14th in the nation. UL Lafayette is at 80%. That's 91st in the nation. So the big difference there in red zone scoring. If it comes down to field goals and touchdowns, you know, it favors App State. App State O-line has given up 10 sacks this season, fourth in the nation. So they're not giving up too many sacks. The Raging Cajuns own the fifth best turnover margin. So there's some stats for that ball game. I would lean towards Appalachian State here. Okay, Houston and Cincinnati. This one started at 11.5 and is now down to 10.5. Houston has 76% of the bets and 89% of the money. So line is not moving much. It moved a point since it opened. But for Houston having most of the money, it's not moving much at all, which tells you that maybe Cincinnati's the right side here. 56.5 is the total that it kicked off at. 53.5, so it went down 3 points. The amount of bets, 50% on each side, 59% towards the over. And Houston has been playing defenses that are allowing 6 yards per play. Let me introduce you to Cincinnati's defense that's only allowing 4.3 yards per play. Cincinnati is the 13th ranked offense and defensive success rate this season. Houston has a 4th best defensive success rate in the nation. So it'll be between, you know, who's going to, is Houston's offense going to be able to keep up with the, be able to put up points against the Cincinnati defense. Two balanced offenses, both rush around 53%. It's going to be a slower pace. Houston's 112 ranking in pace, in tempo, and 70th for Cincinnati. Turnover margin, 6th for Houston and 3rd for Cincinnati. Both take care of the football. Yards per play margin is 1.42, which is 15th in the nation for Houston, and 2.52 for Cincinnati, which is 3rd in the nation. So they're gaining more yards than they're giving up. So the strength of Houston is their passing game, as they produce 272 yards per game, and that's 23rd in the nation. But they'll be going up against the Cincinnati defense that only gives up 161.3 yards through the air, which is 3rd in the nation. Houston's defense is 4th. They do get 3.42 sacks per game. Saying all that, I'm still going to lean towards Cincinnati to cover the 10.5. And then we'll get into a couple different we'll get into two college basketball games, or the two bigger ones of the weekend. This Friday game is Iowa and Purdue. This could be a fun one to watch. They're both fun, but Iowa-Purdue, KenPom and Haslametrics has Purdue favored by 9 right now. This is the first and the third all in offensive adjusted efficiency. Purdue does not turn the ball over on defense. They don't turn other offenses over. They rank 306th in the nation in turnover percentage. Iowa takes care of the ball, 2nd in the nation in turnover percentage. So I don't believe Iowa's going to have any issues there. Purdue does rank 2nd in 3-point percentage and 3rd in 2-point percentage. Effective field goal percentage, 9th for Iowa and 2nd for Purdue. And Purdue, 1st in second chance points. Iowa prefers an average pace, and Purdue likes to slow it down a bit. I cannot bet against Purdue. I think they're that good, but 9 is a big spread. I have not decided on that one yet, but that should be a fun one to watch. And then the next game here, we have Alabama and Gonzaga on Saturday. Haslametrics has it at -8 to the Zags, and KenPom has it at -9. Run, run, run. This is going to be a fun one, too. This is going to be a fast-paced basketball game. If you thought Duke and Gonzaga was fast, this is going to blow it out of the water. 22nd and 24th in game pace in their tempo. And Bama is the 20th fastest possession length, and the Zags are 10th in the nation. So this is going to be a fast-paced ball game here. The Zags are 4th in effective field goal percentage on offense. Bama is 27th. The Zags are 1st in 2-point percentage. The Zags are going to take care of business and most likely cover this 8 or 9-point spread. Those are the games, guys. And, you know, I hope I gave you a little bit more information this week. And like I said, we'll be doing this. We'll be dropping this every single Friday. New podcast every Friday. We'll have new topics. What I'll be doing is sending out tweets each week, middle of the week, beginning of the week, trying to get some ideas from you guys, what you want to hear about. Like I did with the trends this week, I like to help everybody I can explain either my experience or talk to another sharp handicapper in my network. And thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.